The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Okay, this is Winners and Sinners, where, as always on a Friday, we look back at the week that was with a few twists. And joining us is Off the Ball's Cameron Hill and Today FM's Alison Curtis. Cameron, I might start with you, your winner of the week.
It's got to go to Andy Burnham. I mean, what a way to start your term as Prime Minister and Labour leader at the third time of asking. I know it's people were disappointed on Monday when, at number 10, there wasn't hot podium guy being brought out to bring the podium out for his opening speech. He went completely laissez-faire and let's just talk and tie off kind of vibes. But I think the fact that he's sort of a circuit breaker, or describes himself as a circuit breaker PM, and wants to end this cycle of like the revolving door nature of Downing Street for the last 10 years is quite refreshing, I think, from... all
you kind of weird
commentators.
If you didn't want to end a revolving door.
Yeah, it's sort of, I'm here for a good time, not a long time, guys. But even the
I would actually find that refreshing if somebody said that.
Listen, who knows how long this will last, but I'm going to enjoy it. But he wants to start, like, his 10-year plan is going to be launched later this year. And if the UK get to the end of 10 years without six more successive PMs, I think they're in the black, so to speak.
Is there much to him though, or is it all just PR?
I think it's hard to tell from the first week. I think there's a lot of people looking for something a bit more concrete than what Keir Starmer offered, which was basically nothing. And there was a lot of...
Keir Starmer also said he was going to have a 10-year plan and that he was going to change the revolving door nature of politics. Just floating that there
when he came in. Like we said last time, it won't happen again. But the fact that he seems to be a proper political animal. From his time even before being mayor of Greater Manchester, the fact that this is his third time at trying to get the leadership contest, and I think everybody was just happy enough to go, right, have at it, instead of there was whispers at the time of Keir Starmer's departure or when he won the Makerfield by-election of, before we get into this, we might canvass everyone in Labour to see what it is we want to stand for and who our Labour leader is going to be going forward, which felt a little bit like, you know, a camel is a horse designed by a committee, that it would have taken forever, that they just bit the bullet and got someone in there. And I think that's probably the right way for both Labour and Britain.
So it was a good piece by Newton Emerson about him in the Irish Times during the week. And he dealt with many points and was kind of questioning his economic plans, for example. But he also said maybe Andy Burnham's big problem is he always wants to be liked. And he said what the UK does not need right now is a prime minister who's desperate to be liked.
No, and I think Ian Dale made a similar point even after his first pledge was to end rough sleeping, and it was sort of, oh right, are you in favour of motherhood and apple pie as well? That's interesting.
I felt all he was short of saying is, and I wanted to have world peace. It reminded me a tiny bit of the Miss World pageant.
Yes. Do you think that too? Yeah, a little bit.
There was a little bit of a one for everyone in the audience. And they were...
Can you believe?
Genuinely. I heard something during the week as well that it's so difficult to have any policies that are slightly left of anything at the moment because of obviously the dominant force in media in the UK being owned by very, very rich people who might have certain agendas. And I thought that was an interesting point to make because obviously he is, you know, somewhat left-leaning and that,
well,
how is that going to come out?
Depending on what year it is. I mean, what's your joke, Ciara, about...
It's an old joke. It's a... A Blairite, a Brownite, a Corbynite and a centrist walk into the bar and the barman says, what will you have, Mr. Burnham? And so
it changes.
He does. There is a bit of that.
I think Britain is kind of ripe for a left-wing leader, whether or not it's what they need. I think there is an appetite for it.
Well, they have a left-wing leader in Keir Starmer, and we have to remember they have a Labour government that they voted in with a large mandate. So
Starmer would have been more centrist than Burnham.
But they're definitely the left of it's Labour. You know, and now I know that British politics have a much bigger, more established right than we have here. We have centre and left. We don't have anything much to the right of it. And there they would have obviously reform and restore far to the right, and then they would have the Tories more centre right and whatever. But yeah, it's interesting. It is interesting.
And what about the power? Sorry, this is me being completely ignorant. Like of having, you know, held that position for 11 years, was it, as mayor, like, I know he had a previous, you know, served under previous PMs and things. How significant is that, I wonder, as his role now?
Well, I think that's where a lot of his stuff about regionalisation comes from, and devolution and all of that.
He was referred to as number 10 North or something.
He was referred to as the King of the North, and I think he wants to put a shift on regions. And I would agree with you, Shane, some of his economics, like when he's talking about reindustrialisation, my head says to me, this is like Trump, he's going to bring back the you know, the car manufacturers to Detroit. Those ships have sailed.
Yeah.
What Britain needs to do, much like what Ireland needs to do, is create a level of high kind of skilled jobs. That's what we need to do through education and upskilling and things like that, because manufacturing and things, you cannot compete in a Western country with Western wages against Asia and places like that. You simply can't. And that is that's like saying, I remember the mines with fondness. Do you know, it's those days are gone.
Yeah, even the number 10 North stuff, I was like, maybe steer a little bit clear of that. It kind of reminds me of when Sam Allardyce takes over a London club and everyone's kind of, oh, what does Northern know about us down in the south?
But like, you're alienating but also you're prime minister for everybody, and London is the capital city. Why are you almost disparaging one of the great global cities as well?
Like, even his like political ideology is Manchesterism, which I was like, I don't really love that.
It's a really good question that you ask, Alison. I think being mayor of Manchester, and Manchester's a great city, I'm not knocking anyway, but mayor is a limiter. It's like being top of League One in England.
Yeah.
And now he's manager of a Premier League team, but a badly struggling Premier League team. And I think
I think his appointments to cabinet have been very shrewd. I think the fact that he put John Healy, who resigned because he wasn't able to get any funding or enough funding for defence, and Burnham's response was, all right, now you have the purse strings, let's see how you do here. Yeah. And
also, he's seen as centrist. He didn't go for the left-wing option, which might have spooked the markets or whatever. So it was a clever appointment.
Yeah, and even Miliband. I'm looking forward to seeing Miliband
Not at number 11, though.
Not at number 11. No, I think he was pretty cut off about that. But I think I'm cautiously optimistic that maybe there's a bit of stability. But I might be here in a week saying, God, it was a good time while it lasted.
It'll be more than a short-lived
thing. Certainly, it's not even will last longer than
You would hope that something would steady the horses over there. It has been like a pantomime for about a since Brexit, really, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Alison, your winner of the week.
Airline passengers, which could include all of us. So EU rules hoping to improve our rights, basically. There's a particular airline, Irish Airline, that isn't super delighted about some of these coming into effect next summer. But basically,
they refer to them as gobbledygook.
Yes, exactly. And basically, I know you've probably been through this, obviously, the rules, you know, with bringing a luggage on. So it's not just a handbag now, it's an actual piece of luggage that you can put above you. And the big thing for me was is family sitting together. And big thing for everybody. Like, I, on my trip to Canada this summer, spent $200-$300 just ensuring that we were all seated together on the way there and on the way back. Like, it is, yeah. So that's a big thing. And obviously, considering people with mobility issues or disabilities, you know, they're going to be more considered. And then, of course, if you have a cancellation, they have to act faster. I know you've probably been through all of this, but it just sounds good. There is, as we said, there's an airline that is not happy about this.
I'm still slightly confused about what we are entitled, because I would often be on a Ryanair flight, and I know I can bring that, you know, soft, squishy, not very big bag for free that I can shove a few things into. But am I now allowed to bring something bigger than that for free? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Does anyone else know?
Well, and we were speaking to Paul O'Connell on the show about this yesterday, and what he thinks will happen is you will be allowed to bring a 10 kg bag, but he said it will lead to an increase in airfares. And he thinks what will happen is you will have the option of saying, I'm paying €70 for this flight, but if I don't bring a 10 kg bag, I'll pay €55 for this flight. So it'll work in reverse. You know the way now you have to click to take a bag. Now it'll be click to not take a bag, opt out. And that was his take.
Ryanair will find a way to make it work and to try and keep costs down and weight down and all that kind of stuff, because they're all about all that.
They are.
That's interesting. Yeah, I am at the point now when I travel with en famille.
Yeah.
And we're all on, because my youngest kid is 17. I'm like, you're just all sitting in random selection.
Yeah,
I don't care.
That's the thing.
And download something on your phone. Yeah. I'm not paying 15 quid both ways by four of you. Do you know what I mean?
Especially when people are sitting there with headphones on anyway.
Yeah, I know.
It is nice to be
beside. If you're under a certain age, obviously it's a big consideration, but over, you could definitely be like, you're on your own.
No, and they're younger. You've got to be. And that's a good thing. That'll have to happen.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun. Like, I have a reasonably big family and I enjoy the fact that we're all dotted around and are just completely ignoring social norms and just calling it, you what? Down the other side of the plane. You're going where?
Do you want a drink? Drink!
No, it'll be over in a second, sorry. Crawling over the person beside me who clearly wishes the aisle seat had been left free.
I really wish the Hill family were not dominating this plane.
I always thought that what needs to happen is we all need to go for random seats and then we all get on the plane and we all agree en masse as a plane to just rejig ourselves. Do you know what I mean? Like reorder ourselves like Twister.
How do you feel about people who come up to you and go, would you mind swapping seats with me because my girlfriend is sitting beside you? And there's a bit of me that always wants to go, well, why didn't you book the bloody seat then?
Depending on if my seat is good. Like on the way back from Canada, I was delighted. We had, and I don't require extra leg room, but we had so much leg room. And I was like, oh my God, and I had my feet up on where the wheel thing is and just fell asleep. And I was like, this is delightful. But if somebody came along and they were, or if they were an anxious flyer and they really need to be with their support human, I would definitely move.
I'm kind of with you. If you've paid money for extra,
well, now you won't have to.
It's a romantic gesture.
It's only going to be for kids for a certain age.
And it'll be under 12s, I think.
I don't know what, yeah, with
it's,
the 12.
It's smallish children. It's not like my 17-year-old, for example.
Won't count.
No one cares if he's on his own with his Netflix on his
Okay,
own.
We got to take the news headlines. Pause there for a second. Alison and Cameron are staying with us. Let's get the 6:30 news headlines.
Now, you're very welcome back to Winners and Sinners. And Cameron and Alison are still with us. Let's come to you first, Alison, with your sinner.
I know Andrea spoke to Chloe Palmer, who's the mother of the young boy that was one of the most recent people that are struck down by e-scooters. So, and I'm sure it's been everywhere as well. But I'm already an anxious individual when my daughter walks out the door. But in the last few, certainly the last year and certainly in my area, that's another thing that I've put on my list of things to worry about. And I mean, there's so many times, like even when I go to get out of my car, like I'm always cautious to look certainly for cyclists. You're always looking around, but it's just bananas out there, I feel, on the road right now. And it does genuinely concern me. And obviously, you know, the outright ban is not going to be happening, but there are other regulations that obviously are coming in place, like lifting the age to 18 from 16. But I read during the week about someone who actually sells them, and I thought this was interesting as well, that he would like to be protected against, you know, people coming in the same way you have to be a certain age, supposedly, to buy cigarettes and alcohol, that the retailers are protected as well, that you don't get irate people coming in going, I want to buy this and I don't have to prove to you who I'm buying it for and all of that. So I think it's all a step in the right direction. But unfortunately, when you've got a situation where people are responsible for, you know, policing their own things, we don't all agree on things. Like I've so many people in my area, like I literally fear like head injuries like nobody else. And so many people in my area, they're just giving them to the kids and they're so young. And it's just like, why are you, like you're actually rolling the dice here. And I know I'm a Chicken Little, the sky is falling person, but
I think you're fully right. I think we have been treating e-scooters for kids like they are toys.
Yeah.
And yet half of the ICU beds in Temple Street have been taken up with kids with traumatic brain injuries.
50% increase last year.
An unprecedented thing. Yeah. You wouldn't be giving your kids shotguns. Do you know what I mean? Certain things are not suitable for children. And it turns out, and this is a new curve for all of us, I think, we didn't really know how e-scooters were going to go or whatever. We now have seen the fallout of giving them to kids. Yeah. It's not good.
It's terrifying.
I saw the picture of that little boy you mentioned. I think he's 6 in Nathan. Hospital with a head injury. And it broke my heart. Like it really did. And I think if you have, as a parent out there, and I don't have small kids, so I get this. I'm not in the position of having to have the uncomfortable conversation that's going to make them unhappy where I take back their e-scooter. But it's not safe, man. They go too fast for kids. And they are hurting themselves at a rate we've never seen. 1 to 2 e-scooter accidents a day coming into EDs around the country. And it's dangerous.
It's just so terrifying.
And it's not worth it.
And even in the, enforcing high vis and helmets, like that's all. Like I would make her wear a helmet walking to school if I could. Like I am a helmet believer. But like that's not going to be police. Oh my God, but that's not going to be police. Like no jumping on beds. Bunk beds are dangerous. But there's no policing it. Like it's be one of those rules that isn't going to be properly implemented.
I think there will be pressure on the Gardaí to start implementing this now. Easier said than done.
Yeah, I think there's even social pressure being brought to bear. I find myself now, and I have seen several kids on e-scooters in the last few days since this has all been discussed and brought in, and I find myself looking, going, look at that, that's a disgrace. In my head, I've already shifted gears, and I suspect I'm not alone, and people looking kind of going, there's an e-scooter, and I'm one step away from ringing the guards. Do you know what I mean? I really think we
have to step
in to protect kids.
Mm-hmm. Particularly when, like, if you've operated any of those e-scooters, the skill level like is exponential compared to someone who's used to it versus someone new. Like I would have used them when they were in European cities, and if you fall, your inclination is to grip harder on the handlebar, which is where the accelerator is. So if you slip and you grip harder, you're just going to be dragged like
no thank you,
like someone without water skis, but on, you know, lovely soft pavement across your, like, there
that
is,
scares me even more.
There is a real problem if you're not able to use them or you're not used to them, that if you don't have the skills to use it, it can be extremely dangerous.
Klutzy like me, who has dyspraxia, and there's lots of other people like me out there, we're just sitting ducks for these things. Do you know what I mean? I think I would easily.
I think there was a letter in the Irish Times about this during the week, a guy writing in to say, look, I use them. I use it really carefully. I obey the rules of the road. I actually, personally, I'm not saying his argument was right. He's saying, personally, I find it easier and safer than a bike. I'm careful in how I use it. Please don't penalise me.
But that's understandable. Going to be allowed, isn't he?
He's still going to be allowed to go 20k an hour
with a helmet and a high-vis jacket as an adult.
Tax insurance, driver's license.
You're still allowed to do it.
But
I think regulation for all the people that aren't him is a good thing.
I agree, yeah. And I, that's
and
it.
I'm actually not an anxious person, and I jump off, bunk beds, and I have none of those issues. I still think.
Do you check best before dates?
Hardly ever. Do you know what I mean?
That's the kind of person I am.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm the, kind of the opposite, but I think this is a no-brainer. Yeah. There's been too many kids hurt. So scary.
Cameron, who or what are your sinner of the week?
And so there was a piece last week, admittedly, by Oliver Callan in the wake of Mayo beating Loud to get to this weekend's All-Ireland football final, where he was kind of giving out about Mayo fans being what he called a dose now, because they haven't acknowledged the vast amount of luck that they've had on their way to this final.
Have they had loads of luck on the way to the final?
Well, the fact that they've been playing, his argument that they've played Louth, Cork and Meath on the way to this compared to and Dublin for Kerry.
Yeah, but Kerry got a huge amount of luck in both those games.
Yeah, completely. And I caveat everything I'm about to say by saying neither myself or Oliver are disinterested parties when it comes to this. I think Mayo beat Monaghan as well earlier in the championship, so we both have skin in the game. But
are
first
you from
off,
Mayo, Cameron?
I'm from Mayo. Just to let everybody know, and I am looking for a ticket if anyone wants to offer me their place.
You got to get in the queue behind Kathleen.
You
got to
get the plug. Yeah. But firstly, his two problems I had with his argument was one, like, sports fans are a lot of things, logical, rational, and very open to having their opinion to be corrected is not one of them.
No, it's emotive.
And secondly, like, it's kind of the point. You're meant to lose the runner yourself and ignore all the other signs that maybe you're there purely by chance. Like, you're supposed to get excited about this.
Enjoy it. Do you know what? I had this as an Arsenal fan all during the season. Every time there was a big win, people going, look at them, they're idiots. Yeah. They're celebrating. Like I was when Arsenal scored that winner in the last second, Max Diamond against Everton.
Yeah.
When he got to second goal and he ran the pitch. I was jumping around. It didn't mean we'd won the league.
Is that not the point?
Yeah, I was enjoying that moment. I was hugging my son.
You got to keep them until.
But suddenly you're a fool now because you haven't won anything. Yeah, you know, I'm going to enjoy the journey.
Because sport is like, there's so much tension for those 90 minutes or however long that the celebration is the ultimate catharsis. Like, and it's so rare, particularly for someone like Owen Shane was making the point earlier on Lunchtime Live that half of the All-Irelands have been won by Kerry or Dublin combined. So any other county who gets the chance to win it, let alone a county who've been cursed for 75 years.
Andy Moran's point, the Mayo manager, who I thought he answered all that stuff really well. It's just like, people want to enjoy it. Let them enjoy it.
His line was class, saying no one lost a final because of hype. And I thought that's the best way of looking at it.
But also, even, what is it with the fun police? Like, remember there was people giving out about the Scottish fans having the crack in the World Cup. And then I absolutely adored this. The Norway fans doing the rowing.
Yeah.
I loved the rowing. I actually went and sought videos of Vikings, pseudo Vikings, yeah, rowing their way around American cities. Because it was just.
Did you know?
I did, yeah. There was so much.
I love a good Viking roar.
Okay, they're very handsome as well.
Yeah, but, that's it.
But,
yep,
but I loved their enthusiasm. It reminded me a little bit of a weird Scandinavian haka or something. Like, I.
It was communal. Why, it was
exactly,
fun.
Exactly, and
was,
celebrate.
It's
like,
part
the
of
fun,
the,
please,
part of the thing. It's part of
and
the
it was
sport.
A link between the players and the crowd.
Yes,
as well.
Yeah,
it was
of course.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, it's about expressing your membership of your tribe. Is it not a bit of that too, I think?
A little bit. And like you compare it to some of the things that certain sections, not all of them by any means, but certain sections of the Argentina fans did after the World Cup, that was genuinely problematic with some of their statements and gestures. But also part of it is the fact that you're not meant to like it when someone is celebrating. That's like if you lose and the other team get to celebrate, that's the trade-off. It is annoying. It's supposed to be annoying.
But I don't think that means that they shouldn't celebrate.
Exactly.
But there is a celebration.
You earned the right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're going, Did anyone?
I'm going to get a filthy look from the box now here. But did anyone think Andy Moran was maybe saying enjoy the hype because he was thinking you're not going to win and you're not going to be celebrating afterwards?
No, I don't think so. By the way, I'm not sure. I totally agree with him that hype never lost an All Ireland final. I can think of a few.
I think
Dublin in '92 when everyone in the capital assumed they were going to beat Donegal. Mm. And Donegal did a number on him. I mean, I'm not sure hype has never been. Was hype not a factor for Cork last year in the hurling final? I think it might have been.
I think
Andy Moran is too clever and not to guard against that. But he's right. Fans can enjoy themselves.
That's
absolutely
the journey, isn't it? Like, I don't get the fun police either.
I also think that's the trade-off, that you invest in your team. You turn up to matches that are rainy and drizzly and miserable. You drive around. You bring your kids to matches. You spend money. You spend time. You do all that you get. And a lot of time, you're disappointed.
Mm.
So when it goes well,
enjoy it.
Why not?
Absolutely.
Is that not the
I've never seen Bowes lift a trophy. But I have celebrated loads of times during
If and when they do lift a trophy,
Kira,
you will.
I'm going to start crying. I
won't see you for weeks. I'll have to shoulder this on my own. And that's fair enough, Shane.
It is. Okay, better take a break on that note.
On that uplifting and rousing note, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more winners and sinners after this.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
And welcome back to Winners and Sinners. Alison Curtis and Cameron Hill are still with us. Alison, any other business for us?
This is super nerdy now, so bear with me. The Euro notes are getting a makeover. And have you seen this, Cameron? No.
I haven't seen this either, so I'm quite interested.
Okay, so we can all have a say, guys. Just Google Euro notes changing and the first thing that comes up. So the public vote's on until the 21st of September. So the 5, the 10, the 20, 50, 100 and 200 are all going to be changed. Honestly,
we'll all know what the old 200, of course, looks like. Will we? I have no clue.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't even know there was a 200.
So how many notes have you? We don't really use notes anymore.
I know. No, but I have to say, one of the 5 euro notes, there's like 7 options per note and vertical. I thought that would be interesting. So like not looking at it horizontally, but like vertically. Is honestly a piece of art. I encourage everybody to go and look at it afterwards.
It's a
fiver. So Maria Callas is going to be the face there, and each note has a person. So the 10 is Beethoven. There's Marie Curie, and Austrian novelist who won the very first. This is the 200 note, which we've never seen. First Nobel Peace Prize is Bertha von Suttner, and she's going to be on the 200. So loads of artists have submitted this. And they're actually truly, some of them really, really beautiful. And you can have your say. I just thought it's super nerdy, but maybe people want to have their say.
Oh, I have to say, I didn't even know this was happening. I knew there was things like the passport was being reimagined and things like that were happening, but I didn't know this was happening. And I am that nerd. So
yes.
I think I may.
And I know this is radio.
I'm looking
and this
at
is
them.
Visual.
They're nice.
Really beautiful. I know it's visual, but worth
because
checking out.
The Euro notes, dare I say it, I find them a little bland. If you go back to the old punts, I mean, we had some absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the Blasket Island one?
Yes.
And there was a Daniel
O'Connell.
Who was
the woman on the with the head shawl?
Oh.
You know the one I mean?
I do.
Was that a one punt?
Yeah.
I probably only ever had about one punch. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I probably didn't have any big.
I certainly
big,
didn't have 200.
Big no. denominations.
You were a doctor. You had big denominations.
Stop that old joke. I quite like, by the way, before we move on from the Euros.
I know it's radio.
That's a, like a eagle or something.
So all of them have, there's like kingfishers, there's birds will feature in all of them. And the whole theme this time around is European culture. So things that, you know, certain buildings that represent across Europe and animals that are significant to countries.
And I must say, I do like the women that you've mentioned, Marie Curie and Maria Callas and, yeah, and whatever, because we have been underrepresented.
Well, that's the first thing I looked at.
Here,
the
there,
ratio.
And everywhere, forever and a day.
Sure, Lady Lavery, Hazel Lavery, yes, was the was the
now
person
you say it,
symbolizing Kathleen Ni Houlihan. So as a personification of Ireland.
Of Ireland, yeah.
But you're right, they were really glorious, and they now were. They can be again.
Okay, lovely. I like it.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice thought. Cameron, you're any other business?
I've picked the Odyssey, mainly because, much like the All-Ireland Final, I'm still trying to get a ticket to it. But everybody is raving about this film and really enjoying it, except if you're Elon Musk. But what I've really enjoyed about...
That makes me want to see it even
more. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, great. Grist to the mill. But what I've enjoyed about how people have talked about the film is that they're just talking about the film in and of itself, that there's none of this thing that I really hate when something this influential and something that taps into the cultural zeitgeist is when it's, this is a very important film to watch, or it's important TV, or this is going to save cinema. And I just stop tacking that on.
Are you suggesting that that is pretentious?
Incredibly pretentious. Like when Keir Starmer was saying everybody should watch Adolescence, that TV show in secondary schools, and maybe actually fund a mental health service, and that might get a lot of the cracks covered there. But when someone calls this groundbreaking, or this is important and everybody should go see this, it's sort of like, go see it if you want to. I always think if you're hoisting all this prestige and ethos around a piece of art or culture, it takes away from it for me. Like, I will enjoy it for my reasons, but...
That's exactly why I've never seen Titanic as well. Everyone told me to. But my problem with it is I'm very nervous about the time commitment.
The 3 hours plus without an intermission.
Yeah. It is long.
Long time.
Yeah,
that would. Yeah, I've said it before. I was halfway through Oppenheimer, looking at my watch, going, "Seriously, I have another 2 hours of this thing." And I already felt that
just invent the bomb already.
I felt like saying, "Wrap it up. I've had enough."
That's the great. Like, you know what happens in Titanic, so you don't have to sit through the whole thing.
I know, but there's been many big blockbusters. People are like, go see.
I actually saw Titanic when I was very young, and I was like kind of crying and a little bit from the beginning because I was already, well, I'm very suggestible, was kind of attaching to the characters, and I realised that they were probably all going to die. Like, everyone was going to sink, the ship was sinking, and they didn't know. And I remember, like, before anyone else was crying, I was already crying. I like where you're coming from with this, Cameron.
I go 95% of the way with you.
Okay.
Where I slightly disagree, and I'm pretentious, moi. this idea...
At least you know it.
I do think certain films are important for cinema because most cinema is absolutely rubbish. I hate the whole... superhero nonsense that has taken over. So if a film comes along that's a serious drama, I kind of think that is important.
For sure, but that's why you have conversations and internet chat forums afterwards where you can talk with like-minded people about it instead of ascribing like Citizen Kane as this is the film and that's the whole thing and everyone's just going to have to subscribe to that viewpoint from here on in.
Fair.
So go see The Odyssey, but don't tell me it's important.
It's the fourth, I think, biggest opening box office weekend ever in the history of cinema. The other three, Shane, you'll be happy to know, was
Deadpool 1, Deadpool 2.
And Deadpool versus
Deadpool
Wolverine.
Whatever.
Deadpool versus
not,
Wolverine.
Not my bad
One of these
either.
Things is not like the other.
Gotta say, Deadpool's great, though.
Is this?
Yeah.
I don't
it's
know.
Very important.
It's important.
I just say important.
It saved cinema.
You must see this film.
It's actually good fun.
Where do you
and
stand
and
on
I'm very happy
one
to
film
be entertained.
This year, have it make it this one.
No.
Okay.
I like to see two films a year at least.
Are you revealing your inner rebel though, I wonder, Cameron? Because I actually agree with you. When I'm told I should be doing something, I nearly want to not
definitely.
To not
don't
do
tell
it.
Me.
Same as when I'm
and that's a personality type.
Oh yeah.
It's the same as when I'm recommended things because I hate when people say, you don't know me. I'll discover that on my own terms. You know, I'm not some digit man.
But do you make recommendations?
Oh, constantly.
Should people listen
yeah.
to you?
Yeah.
I actually love that.
Because I'm a rebel and a hypocrite.
He never said he was consistent.
No.
Right? Come on.
I actually love that. You don't know me.
Okay. Gotta leave it there, guys. Alison and Cameron Hill. Alison Curtis and Cameron Hill, thank you so much. Really enjoyed that. That's our lot for today, Ciara.
That is our lot for the whole week, in fact. Our thanks to the hardest working team in the building, all of them on the hard shoulder. And myself and Shane will be back on Monday at 4 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Ball. But other than that, have an amazing weekend. Happy, come on, Mayo.
Yeah, happy All Ireland weekend. To our August Toga Buggy, Mayo Abu.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.